Coming up on Tech News Today, did Samsung fake benchmark results? OpenTable wants to help pay your bill, and Google's net neutrality views change now that they're an ISP. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, July 31st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we take the most important stories in the tech world, put them in a big old pot, stir them up, and feed them to you like a delicious meal of news. Starting with our aperitif, the news fuse. Side of Angry Bird, perhaps? Mobile phone benchmarks are now being gamed just like PC benchmarks. A contributor at the Beyond3D forum claimed that the Galaxy S4 only ran at 533 megahertz for benchmarking software. Anantech confirmed this for many, but not all benchmarking apps. Anantech also found that the CPU ran at different speeds under different benchmarking apps. Code in the TWDVFSApp.apk app indicates this is by design. Samsung says the GPU runs at 533 megahertz for many programs, but the maximum GPU frequency, quote, is lowered to 480 megahertz for certain gaming apps, end quote. They say that's to avoid an overload.
Google's announced that starting in August, it will equip 7,000 Starbucks locations in the U.S. with free Google-powered Wi-Fi. Now, Starbucks already offers free Wi-Fi via AT&T, but with the rollout, Google says customers will now get speeds up to 10 times faster than before. Sounds like AT&T is getting kicked to the curb. Burn on you. By the way, if you're in a Google Fiber city, you know, like Kansas City, the speed will jump to 100 times faster, and I predict lots of working from home, meaning working from Starbucks.
The Guardian has a report that spotlights X-Key Score, the National Security Agency's program, that allows the NSA to access nearly everything a typical user does on the internet. The information comes from leaked slides from an X-KeyScore presentation. In the slides, the NSA program gives access to chats, browsing history, private messages, pretty much anything. For example, it's also easy to use if you wanted to look at a Facebook chat. All an agent would need is a Facebook username and a date range.
I use it instead of Backupify. Now, mm-hmm. Office Mobile came to Android today, as long as you have Android 4.0 or more recent. The app is similar to the iOS Office app. You'll need an Office 365 subscription to view or edit documents. Editing is available for Word and Excel documents, but is limited, and documents are stored in the soon-to-be-renamed SkyDrive. The app is only made for phones. Microsoft recommends using the web version of Office if you've got an Android tablet.
Microsoft earned $853 million in revenue from its Surface tablet since their debut last fall. We know this number because it was revealed in an annual financial report that Microsoft filed with the Security and Exchange Commission. Although, the number didn't include number of units sold or how many units were RTs versus pros. Numbers also less than the $900 million that Microsoft had to pay for Surface RT inventory adjustments. And also less than the $898 million that Microsoft paid for Windows 8 and Surface advertising. Although there might be a silver lining here, Walmart apparently is sold out of the discounted Surface RT devices. So it just had to be a certain price.
You know what we don't cover enough of? Word processors. So say hello to Quip, a new word processor that is designed for mobile use. It comes from the ex-CTO of Facebook, Brett Taylor, and it works on the web and iOS. Taylor told TechCrunch that Quip is optimized for the era of tablets and phones. What Quip does, it reformats the document for whatever screen you're using. It also has collaboration tools as well. Quip is free for personal use. A business license is $12 per month, and an Android version is in development.
Bloomberg reports Facebook plans to sell TV-style video advertisements for as much as $2.5 million a day. What is this, the Super Bowl? Reportedly, the 15-second ads will be offered for sale to advertisers later this year on a full-day basis, targeting only age and gender. Users will not see any given ad more than three times in one day.
A UK court recently ruled that Microsoft's SkyDrive name infringed on a trademark owned by British Sky Broadcasting, or BSkyB, and Microsoft has agreed to change the name to something else. In a statement issued today, BSkyB notes that Microsoft won't appeal the court ruling and that the company will allow Microsoft to continue using the brand SkyDrive for a, quote, reasonable period of time to allow for an orderly transition to a new brand.
Welcome to Microsoft Remote Storage Product. Douglas McClendon of Kansas filed an FCC complaint against Google, saying Google Fiber terms forbid hosting, quote, any kind of server. In a response to the FCC, Google claims an exemption from the Open Internet Order for, quote, reasonable network management, and cites similar policies of several other major ISPs. Ryan Singel of Wired points out that Google's terms would technically outlaw things like Minecraft and Slingbox, which are servers, but Google employees in their forums say Google would not try to shut down those sorts of servers. Just trust them.
Nintendo released its financial information for the quarter ending in June. The company reported a profit of $88 million, but an operating loss of roughly $50 million. The company sold 160,000 Wii U consoles, which is down from their previous quarter when it sold 390,000 units.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by the fine folks at Squarespace. You know how much we talk about Squarespace. We like Squarespace. We use Squarespace. I use it for merit books. I wanted to create a reliable place for people to find all the stuff that I've written book-wise. And so I immediately thought of Squarespace. Went there, meritbooks.squarespace.com. Easily done, easily put together because it's an all-in-one platform. It lets you create your own professional website that looks professionally designed. And now we're getting some of you guys to send us your Squarespace websites. Send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website, hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we'll take a look. I got one for a guy who made it for a chef. I used to mention that as a great way to use Squarespace is you can use the free trial to make a website that looks great for a business you love and then hand it over to him. Say, here you go. You want a better website? Here you go. That's what this guy did. We could choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode. Here's some of the reasons you're going to love Squarespace, though. Constantly improving their platform, beautiful designs, easy to use, inexpensive, just $8 a month, includes a free domain name. Mobile ready, every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience. Even their code is beautiful if you're into that sort of thing. And search engine optimized. This ensures that your site's content can be crawled by Google, Yahoo, Bing, and all the other search engines. Not just crawled, but crawled well so that they find the right stuff. Hosting is included. Squarespace takes care of the hosting so you don't have to. Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use that offer code TNT7 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. Don't forget to send a tweet with the hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we might mention your site on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, always excited to have this guest on the show, my old co-host and executive editor and host of Always On at CNET, Ms. Molly Wood. How you doing?
Super. How are you guys? It's so good to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. Of course, we just launched season two of It's a Thing. Yes. First episode came out last week, so that's good fun.
I would argue that I'm your current co-host.
That's true. Right. You are. It's not even an argument.
At least of that one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, my current co-host, Molly Wood. Let's start off talking about the Samsung benchmark gate, since it's a controversy.
Yeah, there's like an ongoing saga right now. So a post over at Beyond 3D Forum claimed that his phone was getting more performance out of a benchmark than it was for a regular application. So Anantech investigated and found the GPU in the international version of the Galaxy S4 runs at 532 megahertz in benchmarking apps. Normally, though, they were seeing clock speeds of 480 megahertz. Now, Anantech said the max GPU frequency of 532 was limited to specific benchmarks, not every single application, and that led to about an 11% boost in performance. Now, the CPU in the international and U.S. versions also jumps in performance with the benchmarks. The highest CPU frequencies were usable by all applications. They were just forced to the maximum in the benchmarks. Niantic also found code in the Galaxy S4 that included a string called Benchmark Booster, which lists a number of benchmarking apps on a whitelist that would modify the frequencies. Now, Samsung issued a statement saying, "We did not use a specific tool on purpose to achieve higher benchmark scores, and that certain full-screen applications like cameras, browsers, video players, and benchmarking tools require the highest performance available." Now, Samsung doesn't publicly tout the GPU speed on any of these devices, by the way. Now, after Niantic took a look at Samsung's statement, they agreed the Samsung statement is in line with their findings. So it seems like this is on the up and up. Molly, is this a big deal at all that Samsung might be boosting performance for benchmarks?
I have to say, from my perspective, it just does not sound like a big deal, because I don't think there are very many people who are going to find that the Galaxy S4 is not fast enough for them. That I think it's plenty powerful to play most of the games. There is probably a teeny, 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 tiny percentage of people out there who are kind of just sitting there seething conceptually about not getting all the power to which they feel they are entitled. But it kind of sounds like a little bit of a no big deal gate to me.
Well, I think you're right. It probably doesn't make a big difference in most cases, and it's probably a good thing. And Niantic points out that limiting that processor speed to save battery life, to make sure you don't burn out the processor when you're playing games, is not a bad thing. They say, right. Talking about full screen is not that big a deal. They're not sure why Samsung said that, but it could have a blowback effect if people misinterpret it. If people say, oh, well, Samsung's, you know, tweaking the benchmark, so you can't trust them anymore. I don't know if I trust Samsung when I hear the reviews. It could bleed out into some kind of fear, uncertainty, and doubt then.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the misunderstanding is virtually guaranteed, because it is sort of gaming, you know, right? Like, there's no question that it is technically accurate to say that Samsung gamed the system, that they rigged the benchmarks to some extent. I just am not sure that the average consumer cares even remotely about phone benchmarking. I mean, it's only very recent that we even have a sense of the speed of these things. For the longest time, the actual capability of these devices and the processors inside them was a closely guarded secret. Remember how hard it was to even try to find out what speeds the phone processors were running at? It's hardly something that consumers are thinking about at all. And I think if Samsung, like you mentioned, can come out and say, you know what we're really doing? We're trying to give you all day battery. Thank you. That's all I really want in my phone.
Yeah, the story caught my eye yesterday. It was just on Flipboard, and I saw, oh, Samsung benchmarking, like, controversy. I'm like, that seems a little nerdy. And then I saw it blow up today. I had no idea this was going to happen. It seems like it offends, like, geek sensitivities. Like, you're like, oh, wait, this shouldn't be right. Because back in the old days with PCs, you'd go, wait a minute, this actually does make a difference if you're upgrading graphics cards or CPUs or any of that stuff. But when you buy a phone, you're buying one full unit. So I don't know if it really makes a difference that they're messing with benchmarks, because it's not like, oh, well, I actually specifically bought the S4 because of this benchmark, because I'm a hardcore mobile gamer. I don't know if that's an actual thing. So it seems like first gut reaction is, no, this shouldn't be right, but it seems like not a big deal.
And it just blew up. Go ahead.
Kind of reminds me of people arguing over, like, you know, the camera megapixels. It's like, okay, well, you know, if you say your camera's is 8 megapixels and it's only 5, I mean, someone's going to call you out on that. But if it takes nice pictures, again, as Molly said, average consumer, who cares? I mean, this is all kind of a semantics argument.
It will. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that it will blow up for a while. It will continue to get kicked around in the tech press for a while because it's a sexy headline, because it sounds like cheating. And then at the end of the day, it will have kind of sort of the usual, like, mini explosion inside our little world. And then I can only imagine it will blow over, unless we find out that, like, Apple was doing the same thing. And then, then it'll get good.
Well, and I think the fact that it's Samsung is what made this, what fanned the flames of this. I don't want to think that we're minimizing the idea that benchmarks should be accurate. We do want accurate numbers. We want the Niantic and Tom's Hardwares of the world to be able to easily find the real numbers. And what Niantic points out is they actually don't use most of the benchmarking software that was affected by this anymore. So I don't think this even has repercussions in the accuracy of reporting. The one thing that Niantic said was, we want to make sure that we still have that command line access to measure the GPU in the future, because that's really cool. That allows us to have real transparency. And that's what this should all be about, is can the people who do this well have the transparency to accurately tell you this is what's going on in the phone, if you're interested.
But they found that out, right? Anyway,
yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, they did. So
can move on. That's what we should all do with this story.
Yeah, let's all sit down at a table and have a nice dinner, and maybe OpenTable will help us pay for it.
Yeah, so OpenTable is testing something kind of cool, in-restaurant payments for a check. So, you know, obviously, if you go up and order a coffee at a counter, you know, the transaction happens right there. But this is for, you go to a nice restaurant, there's four of you, and wouldn't it be nice not to have to wait for the waiter to bring you a bill at the end of the meal? So as a diner, you open up the OpenTable app and you pay the check. And then, you know, you can review the check, make sure that everything looks good, adjust your tip, finish your payment, get up and leave. Now, OpenTable says it's not going to take an extra cut of this transaction if you pay with this app. And by the way, it's still in its testing phase. The company says they'll roll it out to San Francisco first. OpenTable is based in San Francisco. And if all goes well, they'll open it up to other cities as well. Restaurant will be charged the typical interchange fee for a credit card transaction. So, you know, restaurants already pay OpenTable in order to use the software. So OpenTable still making money off of this, is just incentivizing restaurants to use more of its services. The company already works with 28,000 restaurants all over the world. And last month, the company bought another company, a mobile technology company called Just Chalo, for about $11 million. That company was working on a payments application for a restaurant. So it makes sense that they're rolling this technology into their future efforts. But here's my question, and this is something that OpenTable says they understand is an issue right now, is if a bunch of us have dinner and then we get up and leave, well, what's the communication back to the restaurant so that the restaurant doesn't think that we're dining and dashing? And OpenTable is still trying to figure that out. How do we notify, you know, the hostess or the waiter or the cooking staff or whoever, so that everybody's on the same page? And if OpenTable has a solution, they're certainly not saying what it is. What do you guys think would be the most seamless way for this technology to work? Because I love the idea, but you can't kind of have this like start and stop. Wait, did you pay? Let's check. Don't leave yet. Molly, what do you think?
Well, I feel like the other problem is that PayPal is aggressively working on a very similar service. I'm sure that other companies are working on mobile payment techniques that would work similarly to this. PayPal is the one that I know is working specifically with local businesses. They've already rolled out some pilot programs like this in Europe that they're starting to work on bringing to the US. So the problem potentially gets compounded by a bunch of different services doing the same thing. I mean, I would assume that there's some method. Maybe they have like a little OpenTable placard and they put it on your table so that the server has a visual cue that you're like an OpenTable table and you're going to do a mobile payment. In the short term, it's probably going to be more complicated than it needs to be. I mean, I guess you could actually employ human communication to try to overcome it. Like maybe when you sit down, you could say, hey, server, FYI, I'm going to pay through OpenTable.
Ping your server. I like that
idea. Now you've ruined my fine dining experience because now I had to talk to people.
Now I have to talk to a human. Exactly.
I want to be served by robots. All right. No, I think that's actually how it's going to work for a while. It's a little bit of like, oh, hey, I paid by OpenTable. Is that okay? Oh, yeah, we know. We saw. You're good. But I do think that over time, they'll probably come up with some sort of interesting way of, like, I don't know, maybe they just bring you the mints that some restaurants give you. That's the indication, like, we got it.
You know? Right. Well, the other thing, though, is that they could charge you after the fact. So presumably this system would mean that you have your credit card tied to OpenTable so that your reservation was attached to your real name. So even if you did dine, I mean, you know, a restaurant knows like what table you sat at. They know that you made the reservation electronically. There's a pretty good breadcrumb trail there. They could pretty easily, even if you accidentally dined and dashed, they could kind of walk back the cat and figure out who you were. It's the people who really dine and dash. It's the people who say to the waiter, hey, I'm totally going to pay with my mobile on the OpenTable thing. And then leave. And they're the problem.
They've got a screen capture of OpenTable. They don't even have the app.
It's kind of like, you know, when you leave Best Buy and they make you show them your receipt, even though you just went through the checkout. You'd be like, wait, hold on. Did you enjoy your meal? Let me see your app. Okay, you're good.
How many stars
did you get? I like the idea. I love this idea. I really do. I think mobile payment is definitely, you know, going to be more and more integrated. And I like the idea. I've seen the PayPal demos. I think they're really cool. I love the idea that the app that lets you make the restaurant, the reservation in the first place is the one that takes you all the way to the end of the transaction. It's kind of great. I mean, of course, there will be some kinks. But to me, the biggest concern is a bunch of competing apps or competing services all trying to accomplish the same thing in the same restaurant. That to me, it seems like a recipe based on all the sort of maitre d's and chefs I know for them just being like, you know what? No, we're out. In fact, we're cash only. The hell with y'all.
Recipe.
Nice one.
Let's talk about Google. Remember years ago, Google was the fighter for net neutrality. They like bid on the 700 megahertz spectrum just so they could enact open access rules. They got together with Verizon to try to steer the internet connection debate to be more open for at least wireline. Well, it was, we heard the news fuse. There's now a little dispute over Google Fiber because their terms of service say you can't run a server. And Douglas McClendon, who, by the way, they in their letter to the FCC, they point out McClendon can't even get Google Fiber service because he doesn't live in the proper area for it yet. He's only applied for it to come to his area. So they say he doesn't even have standing because he couldn't be our customer if he wanted to. But he complained that, hey, they say you can't have a server. People have complained about this on Google's forums as well. People are like, wait a minute, I run a Minecraft server and your terms say that I can't do that, or I can't use Slingbox, or I can't use Nest. Or VNC into my home connection with GoToMeeting, or run a drop cam. And Google in their forum says, no, this is meant for commercial use. We don't want people running commercial, you know, data centers out of their house without us signing an agreement, because that's a whole different level of service we have to provide. And people rightly respond, well, then why doesn't your terms of service say that? Now, an electrical utility, as an example, would have a problem with you reselling electricity, or if you just draw massively unusual amounts of energy, because it impacts the grid and how they manage it. But Molly, where should the line be for an ISP like Google?
Well, the problems begin as soon as you say an ISP like Google. I mean, now they're in that game, and all of it, and they, once they start to throw their lot in with the other ISPs, they're going to have a built-in excuse that they can say that they have policies that are exactly in line with their brethren in the ISP industry. And so they are already on a tricky path, one that's probably way trickier than they anticipated. I would imagine that what they did is they picked up the language, the terms of service language, wholesale from a Verizon or a Comcast or one of those, and implemented it. And it's reasonable to say we don't want you to set up a P2P server, or we don't want you to run a business off of your residential, Google Fiber line. But they haven't clarified it very well. There's something in there about running a server if you get written permission, but there's no – people can't seem to figure out how you would possibly get written permission. And then it's also just a little bit messy if you're Google and you're suddenly in the position of having to – it's like they seem to get into these businesses – and then go like, oh, crap, there's a lot more involved in this than we thought there was. Dang it. Business is hard.
I wouldn't characterize it that way. I'd say they get into these businesses and realize, oh, our ideals don't match up with actually running this business. Oops.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they sort of naively jump in like, we will change the way that phones are purchased in America. We will change the way that internet is delivered. And it's almost a little bit of... I can't believe I'm going to say this, but validation maybe for some of the companies that have been on the other side of this for so long. Like, you can imagine a Verizon sitting there being like, see, what do we tell you? oh, free super fast internet for everybody? Yeah. What could go wrong, Google?
It just goes to show you that nobody reads terms of service, including the people who draft it and implement them. Because this means Google is, oh, we didn't mean it this way. Then they need to rewrite their terms of service. I'm sure they're shocked that anybody read it in the first place. So this idea, if they're going to actually keep this kind of policy and they want to fix their PR when it comes to this, they have to explain like some kind of objective way. No amount of traffic about, you know, this much traffic in your server. So if you're going to use a Slingbox, you're only going so much. If you're going to be moving around terabytes of data, maybe that's when you have to move. But they should read their own terms of service too, because that seems like the smart thing to do if you're running a business.
I really think they knew exactly what they were doing when they put these terms of service in, which is you write your terms of service over broad to protect yourself. And so they just hoped no one would make a big deal out of it. And now people are making a big deal out of it. I think they should rewrite them. And I always think if you're going to write terms of service to prevent something, you should write it to prevent that thing because it's anti-consumer otherwise. And Google's being anti-consumer here.
They really are. And I am embarrassed for them because it does really look like they just copy and pasted some insanely broad terms of service that they got from somebody that they previously would have been out in the streets declaring to be evil. And that is lazy, sloppy. And for God's sake, it's a bunch of engineers at that company. Did you not think that somebody was going to put this on Reddit?
Yeah, I mean, they got caught in the like, oh, but we never would do that. I guess I could see how it's written, but we're just supposed to trust you. That's not going to hold up in court. I guess maybe they could say, well, I got written permission on the forums. Maybe that can be a strategy for defending yourself. I don't know. That's not the way it should be done. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today, Gazelle. If you have got some gadgets cluttering up your house, I know I do, and every once in a while I just make a big spring cleaning. Doesn't even matter what season it's going to be, an autumn cleaning or winter cleaning, summer cleaning. and I send a bunch of gadgets to Gazelle and get cash for them. It's very easy to do. You go to gazelle.com, you lock in the quote, and it's no risk. If you don't like the quote, you don't have to take it, but your gadget's not going to get more valuable. So it's the easiest way to get that thing and turn it into cash that you can use for future gadgets. You want that new HTC One? You want the Moto X that's coming out this week? You want a tablet? They actually take tablets. Gazelle's now buying back a large selection of tablets. They've always bought the iPad, but you can now sell select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, Asus tablets. We mentioned Ayaz sold his old Nexus 7 to them to get the new Nexus 7. And the nice part is you lock in that quote for 30 days. You don't have to send your old tablet right away. You wait for the new one to arrive. Get your data off of it, wipe the other one, send it off to Gazelle. Gazelle will wipe it for you too if you don't want to mess with that. And you get paid in cash. Payments fast within a few days. What's your iPhone, Samsung, other Android smartphone or tablet worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, Nintendo had their earnings report, and it was good news, but for the wrong reasons, eh, Ayaz?
Yeah, good news, company made a profit, $88 million. The bad news, the profit's due in part to a cheaper yen, and Nintendo reporting an operating loss of $50.2 million, and they sold that 160,000 Wii U game console number. That's a really bad number for them. It brings total sales to 3.61 million units. Nintendo predicted it would sell 5.5 million consoles by March 31st, 2013. They're well under that. Wii U software sales were also down 51.3% compared to the previous quarter. If you're watching the video, you can see this chart of Wii U sales. The software is in the gray and the hardware is in the blue. And you can see not doing so well. The trends aren't so good. And the Wii U is still sold as a loss leader. So the more Wii U's they sell, the more loss they take. So that's not going so great. The 3DS sold 1.4 million units, which is down from the previous year, but it's also more profitable. So the more 3DSs they sell, the more money they make. Nintendo, though, did not change its prediction that by the end of the fiscal year, it will make 100 billion yen. That's $1 billion U.S. dollars. That's what they're talking about in the fiscal year as an actual revenue number here. Molly, Nintendo theoretically is not run by crazy people. What could they have up their sleeves
allegedly
that they think they can make $1 billion?
I mean, you say that, but do you have any proof that they're not run by crazy people? Have you been to their last couple of E3 press conferences? Because, ouch. Like, Nintendo's getting downright embarrassing. They actually are coming off like the crazy uncle at the wedding. They're just, they're self-deluded.
That's why I said theoretically.
If they think they're going to make $1 billion on the Wii U, they are absolutely delusional. Because I don't know if you've seen this thing. They are completely unable to articulate the reason that you would want one. It's baffling. It's overpriced. The little controller, I think it only comes with one, and then you have to buy the other ones, and the other ones are like roughly $9,000 each. And then you can't figure out why you're supposed to have it over the Wii, which everybody bought and nobody plays anymore. They just... every time I see them on stage, I'm kind of horrified and I just want to crawl away.
Is the $1 billion for just the Wii U, or is that they're just saying we're going to make that by the end of the year? Because the 3DS is actually, it's slowing down, but at least it's selling in larger amounts.
It's for the whole company. It's not just Wii
U. Yeah, okay. Right.
So then they might, but the fact is, if they can't show the marketplace that their next products will be worth buying, then, you know, I mean, you can't coast on the 3DS forever. Although maybe they should. I don't know. Maybe they should just make a phone.
Everybody keeps saying that.
Maybe they're hoping that these numbers will just get buried because they'll have such a great holiday season with, you know, whatever else is yet to be announced, and that we'll all just kind of forget about this and it'll all even out.
Yeah, I love that they may be, in fact, they actually may be hoping that they'll have a better holiday season because they'll sell some things that are not the Wii U.
I want to clarify that 100 billion yen number, by the way. That's about the forecast for operating income. And they're claiming the net income is going to be 55 billion yen by the end of March of next year. So it's not necessarily on the Wii U, but this is an operating. We're talking about operating income. And they're making an operating loss currently. So unless they are doing a phone or they are getting software developers on board again, because the Wii U does not have games, but that's where they make money, because if the Wii U isn't selling, I mean, if the Wii U sells, they lose money. They need to sell games. Is software
the key figure here is 9 million Wii U's by March, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can they sell 9 million Wii U's by March? And the argument that they could get close to that is to say, during the holiday season, people will buy more consoles in general. So there will be a rising tide. Maybe people will start to discover the Wii U that didn't before. They'll compare it to the Xbox One. They'll compare it to the PS4. And at $299, they'll decide to buy it just because it's cheaper. And it has a little more than the Wii did. That's what Nintendo's banking on. But that hasn't worked so far. So even if we assume that they're going to sell a lot more than 160,000 units in that quarter, I still don't see how they make 9 million out of that. That's just too big of a hill to climb, even for
Mario. And that isn't even, I mean, really, for the Wii U to be selling this poorly already. I mean, I understand the possibility that people are waiting for new consoles, but that's because they're waiting for new consoles that are not the Wii U. I mean, the Xbox One and the PS4 are serious competitors. Like, you would have to be making the most kind of unfortunate financial decision to choose a Wii U over one of those. It doesn't have a fully fleshed out sort of media integration strategy. I just don't see that console in particular, being a strong competitor at the holidays. And I feel like kids would rather have a tablet to play games on than a 3DS. I mean, I worry about these stories because I feel like Nintendo's in serious trouble and they have no idea.
And that's going to be the issue. They have the things like the TV, they have the tablet that comes with the Wii U, but nobody seems to be preferring those over other options.
And part of that is their marketing. Their launch has been baffling. Sorry, not to like belabor.
Yeah,
not to just
no.
Beat
part
Nintendo
part of it is part of it
more,
is their marketing.
But they cannot explain to people how it works, how many controllers you get, and why you want it. And that probably is the biggest problem of all.
All right. We've got security stories to round us out. Of course, it's the week of Black Hat and DEF CON. But this first story doesn't have to do with that so much as Twitter dealing with the government and the FISA requests.
Yeah, so Twitter's released the third of its semi-annual transparency reports. And this is kind of interesting because it's the first report since the whole Prism leaks, what's really going on, and public outrage. So Twitter shows how often it responds to requests for user information and take down tweets based on a request from law enforcement or copyright requests, but maintains we can't give those requests their own section. Jeremy Kessel, who's the legal manager over at Twitter, says, "We believe it's important to be able to publish numbers of national security requests, including FISA disclosures, separately from non-secret requests. Unfortunately, we're still not able to include such metrics." So Twitter's trying to be at least transparent that it is being held back from giving us all of the information. But still some interesting numbers here. This is all looking at 2012. In the first half of last year, about 1,100 requests for account information. Most of those, the majority, came from the U.S., and about 60% of those Twitter complied with. In the second half, about the same, about 1,000 requests were received, majority from the U.S. as well. Inside the U.S., over half of requests were subpoenas, which were received from law enforcement. They don't require court approval. In fact, less than a quarter of those requests are ever accompanied by a warrant. And then there's sort of a strange other category, which made up 10% of the requests. You might say, maybe that's where all the sensitive stuff is going, into the other category. What's interesting is that the numbers of requests to take down tweets, specific tweets, or suspend accounts extremely low, only 60 requests, at least what Twitter is reporting, up from 42 the year previous, came from countries like Russia, Turkey, and Brazil. And Twitter says of those requests, only 4 accounts and 73 individual tweets were withheld, although in some cases accounts were reinstated after being temporarily taken down. I guess I find this stuff interesting, although without proper understanding of really how these numbers are broken down, Twitter's hands seem pretty tied here. They're trying to let us know as much as they can, at the same time saying, yeah, there's security stuff and we can't actually break out these numbers. Is there anything more that we can do about this? Molly, I know that sometimes you get pretty fired up about privacy. I mean, is Twitter doing all it can, and can we expect any sort of better indication of what these numbers are saying going down the road?
Well, the only thing that bothers me about these numbers is that Twitter is not saying that. I think Twitter needs to be more specific about why they can't break out these metrics, right? It's one thing to just say, we can't break out those metrics. It's another thing to say, the government said that we can't break out these metrics or else they will come and take us away. Do you understand what we're saying? This is how bad it is. Because without that, there's no call to action. There's really just kind of decent PR on Twitter's side. It's Twitter being able to say, we're being totally transparent. Look, here's the things. And we hardly took down any accounts at all. And to be honest, I mean, I think Twitter has probably the best reputation, or among the best reputations right now, for kind of standing up to the government. They had a pretty good track record when it came to not turning over information in the prison with the PRISM program. So to me, this sort of is Twitter trying to continue to position itself as a protector of your privacy. I mean, I have to say that when I look at these numbers, I don't find the number of requests overall that alarming. And it's probably because, let's be honest, Twitter's a public medium for communicating. I would be surprised if there was actually that much posted on Twitter that could lead to things like actionable intelligence or arrests. I mean, that's a pretty stupid criminal.
Yeah. Well, and there is a limit to what Twitter can say, even about what they can't say.
Right.
That's how messed up this situation is. With FISA, is that they can't even acknowledge that they've received requests. So they're trying to do this little dance around, like, okay, we wish we could say more about things like FISA disclosures, but once they use that word, then they're like, oh, but we better not say this, because then we could be accused of X, Y, and Z. It's just ridiculous. So I think your last point is the key point here. The numbers are not so large that even if you assume all of these were FISA disclosures, that they make you quail, which means that the debate should really be about what could happen, not what is necessarily happening right now. But I think your other point is very good as well. Like, I'm not sure
how much secret intelligence
you get out of Twitter.
Right. I'm way more worried about FISA requests that we never, ever hear about from Facebook. Right. You know, I mean, there are much bigger fish to fry as far as FISA and information requests are concerned than Twitter.
Yeah, and here are some of those fish, actually. Adrienne Jeffries over on The Verge has the top 10 reasons to be afraid of hackers. This kind of harkens me back to the old Buzz Out Loud stories that we would do during Black Hat and DEF CON weeks. Adrienne has gone above and beyond to put 10 things together that will scare the crap out of you. I mean, she includes the NSA, and they just had that X key score released today about how, and if you read that A Guardian article, it's actually funny, like, it doesn't actually work that well. Sometimes, like, you'll get false hits sometimes, so be careful. There's also hijacking a GoPro to be a spy cam, so when you're out hiking, someone could spy on you. $60 sensors that map everyone's movements. You just sprinkle them around a city, and they'll map all the signals of people's cell phones. You could shut down a power plant from 40 miles away. You can hack a pacemaker to stop someone's heart from 30 feet away. Molly, not to emphasize the fear in fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but which of these is your favorite?
This is why, can I just be clear? This is why I friggin' hate Black Hat season. I hate it. I hate DEF CON season. Like, every time DEF CON news starts coming out, I'm like, la, 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 la. I don't want to know. Because I call this so many ways to die. Like, I can't be worried about everything in the world all the time. Although, I think my absolute favorite in this entire list is probably the idea that the hackers can take over my smart TV and crank up my sauna, because it's just like, it's kind of, it reminds me of that movie Maximum Overdrive where all the machines come to life and like the soda machine kills that dude and the trucks go out of control. I kind of am delighted by the B movie possibilities of a smart house hack. Like, you could fry somebody in their own sauna, and then you could, like, shoot flying, burning popcorn into their eyeballs, and then you could use the Nest to make it freeze.
You're writing just a movie right now, Molly, and I must watch it.
I'm writing a bad movie because I refuse to live in fear of DEFCON anymore.
Does any of this stuff scare you?
You know, it is the smart home one. That's the one that actually caught my eye a couple of days ago, this idea that people were trying to hack into televisions and then Nests and every other thing that gets internet connected. I was looking for, like, for a very long time for, like, an internet connected lock for my front door so I don't get locked out. I don't think I want to do that. But the other thing is, it turns out they can come up with keys that you could 3D print as well. So even if you have a non-internet connected device, if you can figure out by serial number what lock it is, you can just print a key out. So I think my house being invaded is the biggest fear for me right now.
That's pretty upsetting.
I've got the Battlestar Galactica house here. I got no Ethernet in my television. I got dumb locks. Cylons aren't going to get in my house.
No, totally.
Yeah, my house, they're going to shut down a power plant from 40 miles away.
Hey, and then I'll be drinking.
That'll stop the hackers from getting into the house, right?
I hope you guys have candles.
Don't the hackers need the, I know they've got their own generators. Fine. I get it. I refuse.
That's a good point. Is the most of this stuff is done to show the vulnerabilities, as we mentioned when we talked about the car hacking story last week, and get awareness that, hey, you need to lock these down, power plants. You shouldn't be running an insecure network that would allow this to happen. Pacemaker makers, you shouldn't be allowing anything to connect wirelessly into a pacemaker. That's not a good idea. And a lot of this stuff can be solved with a firmware upgrade. So that's the positive to take out of this is, yes, all of this stuff sounds scary, but it's scary for a reason, to get the companies to lock down and make it harder for these things to be hacked. So
honestly, the scariest part of all that for me is that the companies, they never do that.
Oh, man. Or they resist it. Yeah. They drag their feet on it. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. We did another straw poll vote today with our live audience between two stories. One, an insane close-up video of a tornado in Italy. And the other, with this device, you can control a rat using the power of your mind. And wow, was it close. 62 votes to 60. 51% to 49%. Just barely, the rat wins. And maybe it's, I mean, I don't know. This combines two great stories that we've been covering for years. One is controlling an animal remotely with a computer. The other is moving something like a ball with your mind. They kind of plugged these two together and did an EEG on a human. And all they did was they had them look at a screen. And when they looked at the screen, that caused a certain EEG signal to come out. So they could only control one thing. And then with a sonic pulse to the brain of the rat, which was under sedation, they were able to target the neurons that make the tail wag. But person could look at a screen and make a rat's tail wag. It's the beginning of the end.
Poor it, man, you know, between this story and then the story about how they were actually able to implant false memories in mice. Did you guys cover that one?
Yeah, mouse world is over. Yeah.
I got to say, it sucks to be a lab animal.
It really does.
Not to like be a big buzzkill, but man, poor little critters. Also, that's insane. We should totally free them I'm not excited about the zombie rats. Like, speaking of so many ways to die, something goes wrong and you accidentally turn this into a zombie rat, you'll be sorry.
I would think the actual practical application of this is to help paralysis, right? Like, you'd be able to move yourself around, because mice are pretty good analogs for humans if you're going to test on anything. So hopefully they won't be implementing zombie rats.
I think it's rat-nado all the way.
Oh.
Rat-nado. This is a scary, scary, scary world. I do not want to think about that. A
swirling storm of rats. Oh, wow.
All right. Protect yourself from the rats that will someday watch your moves on the internet with our sponsor, ProXPN. We're taking a commercial break here. ProxVPN is a global VPN that works with almost any internet connection. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProxVPN, including your web browser, your email, your file sharing program, your instant messaging programs. ProxVPN keeps everything you do online hidden from prying eyes, disguises your physical location, and gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. It supports OpenVPN or PPTP, so I use it on my phone. You can protect yourself against your ISP's six strike rules, bypass internet filtering or blocked websites if you're traveling in an area that does that, bypass geographical restrictions. It's for Windows and Mac. You can use it on public or corporate Wi-Fi. In fact, you should use it on public Wi-Fi anytime. You should always be using a VPN if you're out at some coffee shop, like we mentioned with Starbucks and Google. Don't trust that Wi-Fi. Somebody sitting out somewhere in that coffee shop could be snooping your packets. Use a VPN. Even Steve Gibson from Security Now likes it. He gave it a great review on Security Now. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProxPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer, though. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. Less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. Go to proxpn.com/twit. Sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProxPN for their support of Tech News Today. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Tom.
What's on the calendar?
Oh, DEF CON is kicking off in Las Vegas tomorrow. So obviously we all need to panic. Power plants will be shut down nationwide very soon. Just kidding. Also tomorrow, Motorola's Moto X press event is happening. But that's not all, because LinkedIn is reporting their quarterly earnings. And Google's starting the process of upgrading its SSL certificate to 2048-bit keys. That's going to happen by the end of this year, but it's starting tomorrow. And then looking ahead to September 12th, the feds will declassify the Yahoo Prism decision, at least by September 12th, if not before.
We finally get some insight into how some of this works. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got an email from Stuart from Belfast. He says, love the show. Regarding episode 805 and the story about ISPs not investing in bandwidth to squeeze content creators for cash, could Netflix release monthly ISP league tables in an attempt to educate viewers and call out the ISPs? Well, Stuart, you're actually in luck, because if you go to ispspeedindex.netflix.com, they actually have a big public table showing different countries and the speeds, the best ISPs you can find for Netflix. So they apparently already do this.
No, that Stuart's saying is the reason they do that to call out the ISPs. And I think, yes, absolutely, Stuart. That is why Netflix is doing this. They're trying to put a little of that
public shaming,
covert pressure. The thing is, this doesn't work that well if you don't have a choice of ISP. You can go find out your ISP sucks there and then you can't change it.
And as Tom well remembers, Netflix has actually been doing this for years. They've been trying to name and shame the ISPs for years. They have been putting out all kinds of net neutrality and broadband speed reports, and it just never helps because, like you said, they're monopolies in their geographic regions.
Yeah. So I don't know how we fix that, but fix it.
So many ways to die.
Zombie rats will fix this.
Zombie rats will fix
it. Big surprise, Google Fiber. That's the best way in the U.S. to get Netflix,
by
the way.
Kansas City.
Oh my God, you guys, is Google Fiber like really fast?
But don't run a server on it. You're gonna
I had no idea. All right, that wraps it up for us. Molly Wood, thank you so much. Of course, you can find us together on itsathing.me. It's just a fun podcast we do about things. But what else you got going on you want to tell folks about?
We are deep into production of season 5 of Always On, and season 5 will launch on August 13th with our most... Wow. Crazy, right? They're short. They're short little seasons. But we'll have a most durable gadgets episode, so if you're wondering what to buy for your kids, we'll have that. And then the season kicks off. This season, we're going to have our first ever TV torture test. So stay tuned for that.
No.
Three words, people. Steel-toed boots.
Oh, my God.
Discus for really? Dropping.
Tossing like a discus?
That seems, I don't know.
You could hire some strong men.
I think Eric Franklin could do it, actually.
Some muscles. Eric Franklin is going to help us out with that one, actually. Which is also why we're going to have Rage Quit.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, check it out. CNET.com/always on. As always, great to have you on.
My pleasure, as always. to be on.
Thanks, Molly. Don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can vote on the stories of the day. Vote them up, vote them down, submit your own. Let us know what kind of stuff you'd like us to talk about. It's very helpful in putting together our lineup. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with the newly married Patrick Beja. See you then.